drama right out of the gate, and the Chirp podcast with Darren Millard is soaking it in like aloe on a fresh sunburn. It feels so good on that fresh pain. Longtime colleague and lead announcer on Hockey Night in Canada, Chris Cuthbert, telling it straight. We're talking to you, Edmonton, staring right at you, Toronto. It's time to see how bad the burn is. The Chirp podcast with Darren Millard.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Huzzah! Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
That's a disgrace! That's a disgrace! What a joke!
Hit him, light him up, light him up.
Yeah, nice hit!
That's solid.
So the Stanley Cup playoffs grabbed our attention by the throat. Too graphic? Well, not if you're a fan of the six favorites that stumbled out of the gate. Add in the fact that two are Canadian teams boasting superstars, and we have a full-blown situation. Showing the foot speed of Connor McDavid, producer Bob, you're awesome, Bob. I love what you did here. You called up the lead voice of Hockey Night in Canada, Chris Cuthbert, and said, we need you. We need the read on Toronto and Edmonton. Cuthbert is working that Leafs series against the Tampa Bay Lightning right now, and he's got the rare ability. I can't do this. I jump to all kinds of conclusions, and I just can't rationalize it in any time of calm form. But Cuthbert, he can sift through a series and tell you what is or is not happening. The result may say one thing, but the series is actually trending in another. Plus, we'll take advantage of sitting down with Chris and give you some inside information of being a play-by-play announcer. What happens if you leave out one letter in a name? Just one letter. It's playoff time on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard. Don't get to hang out with him very often, so this is awesome to be front and center with Chris Cuthbert. You're covering this Toronto Maple Leaf series, so let's start there. What was the journey like in game one?
Well, it was, it's funny. John Cooper talked to us before the game, and he said, he's a veteran of all these playoff runs. He's gone to the final three straight years, but he said, I never know what to expect in game number one. And I think what I least expected was a blowout by the visitors in game one, because there had been such a positive vibe being built up in Toronto. They ended the season pretty well. I think 6-1-1 down the stretch. Tampa was 2-4, and everybody's wondering, are they out of gas? And so the building's amped up. It's ready to go. And a minute 18 in, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare scores. Corey Perry's always such a thorn in the side of the Leafs. He was a factor in the first goal. He was a factor all night long. And the air came out of the balloon pretty quickly in game number one for Toronto. And the Tampa Bay Lightning looked just as good as they always seem to be in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
So you've done your preparation, you've got sort of a plan of attack, and then it goes sideways like that. How does it affect how you guys call the game?
Well, it was a tough third period, not going to lie. Those are not the games you like to call, no matter who's leading, because the Leafs actually climbed back in this game, and with 6.5 minutes to go in the second, it's a one-goal game, and now you're thinking this is the way the playoffs are supposed to be. But the playoffs always give you something that you don't expect. And there were some controversial plays. Michael Bunting is going to have a hearing today for a hit that, again, seemed to reverse the momentum of the game back in favor of Tampa. And the Lightning power play just was awesome all night long. They go 4-for-8. I did a stat. I'm not sure if I can find it now, but the winning teams so far over the first couple nights of playoffs, I mean, their power plays are off the charts. So that's been one of the things. Road teams winning, power play success being key in the first night. So you've got a hearing for Bunting on that play. You've got kind of a controversial goal that we never saw across the line, but the Situation Room did, and I'm not going to question that. But it was, that made it 5-2. Sheldon Keefe identified that as kind of the difference maker goal. And that's why he challenged that goal for goaltender interference. And that was a power play. An unsuccessful challenge gave Tampa Bay a two-man advantage, and they score again, and it's 6-2 after two. And another one of the elements, the Lightning score twice in the dying seconds of periods, 1956 of the first, 1959 of the second, and those are back-breaking goals as well. So it was just another Leaf playoff game where everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And again, Tampa, you know, we laugh because John Cooper told us before the game in a little private meeting that he considered his team massive underdogs. And I did roll my eyes at that. And we debated that a little bit because I just don't see massive, but the massive underdogs. He also called the Leaf defensive play. He called them defensive juggernauts going into the series. So he was playing his mind games, and I don't think they're massive underdogs anymore. And the Leafs need to get back to being a defensive juggernaut if they've got any chance to get back in the series.
What do you appreciate more now that you've done this for a number of years? A great coach like Cooper or a fun team to call? Because the coach part of it, being able to bring you in, is huge for background.
No, it is. And it's one of the things that I love most about doing the playoffs is we get that 10 minutes with each coach before each game. And you learn a lot about them. And John Cooper's one of my favorite guys to cover. Because he's frank, he's a smart guy who does like to challenge you a little bit, play mind games. So you have to decipher, decode sometimes. Jared Bednar, just terrific for laying out what to expect and what's ticking in his team. So regardless of the series, regardless of the years, that's always been a highlight. But at the end of the day, it's the product on the ice. And when the game's good, it makes my job a whole lot easier.
You ever have a coach come at you for something that you've said during a game?
I'm trying to think, not often. Sometimes, you know, this was not when I was calling games, but I remember way back when, this might have been 1987, Detroit came in as underdogs against those amazing Oilers teams. And Jacques Demers was the coach, and they upset the Oilers in game one. And I remember on my Supper Time Sports talked about how well prepared Jacques Demers was, or prepared his team in game one. And then the Oilers come back in game two, they win convincingly. And in the press conference, I asked Glenn Sather a question, and he did a quick double take and realized, that's Cuthbert asking the question, and he's the guy that loved the way Demers prepared his team for game number one. So he was pretty emphatic on the way he had prepared his game for or team for game number two, and I'll never forget that.
That's awesome that Slats was watching the Supper Time Sports.
Yeah, we like that. We do like that. He didn't miss much. I'll tell you that. Glenn Sather did not miss much.
So awesome pressure on both Edmonton and Toronto. Who do you think is under the more heat?
Well, I think historically, this ghost thing, the demons, the drought, the weight just keeps piling up. And, you bring in guys that are fresh to it and they will tell you, well, we weren't part of, the failures 5 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago. We weren't part of that. But you see that stare after a game one from even somebody like Ryan O'Reilly, who's just got here and who's had all the playoff success, Conn Smythe Trophy winner. And, you recognize that there's a little bit more weight here. I'm sure there's that kind of weight because the expectations are growing in Edmonton. I think it's a team that can go to the Stanley Cup final and perhaps win. And so they lose again in game one. But, I haven't done many series where after game one, this isn't going to happen. In fact, I was just kind of reflecting on how many teams that I've done that have come back from one down or even two down. So it's early in a series, and how many teams that have jumped out to an early lead and it hasn't followed through. But I'd be less worried about Edmonton just because of the pedigree of Tampa Bay. I think the margin for error for Toronto is a lot less than it is for Edmonton. And that's with all due respect for the Kings, who are an impressive team, and I think they're under the radar a little bit. But the Lightning, after at least one game, look like the team that's been there time and time again, with the caveat that I think there'll be some concern. We don't know the status of Victor Hedman, Eric Chernak. That blue line's going to get pretty thin if those guys can't get back in quickly.
Have you guys spent much time talking about the window in Toronto and how much they put into this playoff run with acquisitions?
I think there is that sense, especially with Austin Matthews' contract coming up in a year and the fact July 1st they can start negotiating. It's amazing how quickly the window can start to open, but then start to close. Mm-hmm. And it's not time to reflect, I think, as they get into a new playoff year, on past failures, but the Montreal loss 2 years ago, clearly one that, you know, that was prime window, and they let that series get away. And even last year, you know, they're up 3-2 in game six in Tampa and in control with not a lot happening. And then they take back-to-back penalties. The Lightning tie it on a 5-on-3, and then Braden Point wins it in overtime. And still they're going home for game seven, and a guy like Nick Paul beat you with two goals in game seven. The last 2 years have been prime window, and this is the best team. This is the best team they've sent to the playoffs based on, I think, depth. You know, Sheldon Keefe talked about this yesterday prior to the game. He talked about this is kind of the first time feels comfortable sending four lines out. Last year, he felt like they were a good three-line team, but this year, just a little more depth, but none of that showed up in game one.
And yet, the same old bugaboo, goaltending. Where's your thought process on the Maple Leafs' net money?
Well, Ilya Samsonov had a great year, and he was particularly good at home. He was 19-3-3 at home.
Yeah.
And nobody's fooling anybody. His stats were better than Andrei Vasilevsky's, but nobody's going to say that Andrei Vasilevsky was a better player or that Andrei Vasilevsky's not a big edge for the Lightning in the series. So I did look back. Every time Samsonov had a struggle this year, he was able to bounce back. I think in all the games, he's 7-0-2 in games after giving up 4+. And so I expect him to start game two. But the playoffs a different animal. He's only won once in the playoffs. So can he bounce back again? That'll be a question.
Yeah, I was shocked by the playoff number when that jumped out at me about only winning once. And then seeing the faces and great director that worked your game last night. Who was the director that?
John Cipolla. And I'm glad you mentioned that because Canadian Screen Awards winner this year. So, yep, we've got good people behind the scenes. In fact, sorry for that little interruption there. My producer was just trying to get a hold of me, but we'll keep going.
Who's that?
Jeff Giordat.
Okay.
Who 25 years ago was sitting beside me in the
stats,
doing stats. He was quick stat, but now he's one of the best producers in the business.
Spla and I worked in Winnipeg together at CKND way back when. So love him. He's an amazing guy. And Giordad was amazing running around the press box. Yeah. So all these people continuing to do great work.
Unsung heroes. We get some credit, and often we get the blame. They don't get enough credit, and rarely do they deserve any critique.
No, we just go off on them every now and then, and then we're talent. We deserve all this stuff.
We're allowed to be petulant.
Do you still get nervous before games, or does it wear off during a playoff run?
You know what? Game ones. I find game one of the playoffs, game one of this, for me, the Stanley Cup final was a new thing in the last couple of years. And I noticed the butterflies a little bit more in game one of the Stanley Cup final. But yeah, I was a nervous guy early in my career and used to get wound up pretty good. And in fact, when I first started in the 80s, breakfast was even tough on game day, but not anymore. And it still beats working for a living, Darren.
Breakfast, like getting it down or having it come up?
Just not even feeling like coffee was breakfast in the 80s for a while. Yeah.
I'm with you on that. Why hasn't Canada won since 1993?
Boy, that's a good question. There's been some squ- and you know what? 93 was a surprise. 93,
yes.
Yeah, I covered the Canadians for three of the four rounds there. And going back to, getting down in a series, Quebec wins the first two games. They're up 2-0 in game three. I remember this is how long ago that was. We used to be able to go on the bus with the players. The media could be on the players' bus going back to the hotel. And I was just thinking about this because, as it turned out, I sat in the row behind Patrick Waugh after practice, after game one in Quebec. And he stared out the window on the way back to the hotel the whole time. And I kind of was making note that, is there anybody with more pressure on him in these playoffs than Patrick Waugh? And 16 wins later, the legend just grew even more. But there's been a few of those series where game three always seems to turn a series. And again, down 2-0 in game three, down 2-0 in the series. They come back and force overtime in the third game. And then they win in overtime. And they ended up winning, 10 in overtime that series?
Yeah.
So I don't have a good answer. I think the salary cap hurt a lot of the Canadian teams that there was no salary cap hurt a lot of teams because the Rangers were spending a lot of money. Detroit was spending a lot of money. The Leafs should have been spending a lot of money, but they didn't. And until the salary cap era, I think that kind of evened the playing field again. And still nobody's taken advantage of it. Again, you talked about window. The window's been there for the Leafs. I think the window's there now for the Oilers. And I think back in the early 2000s, that Vancouver team squandered some chances when they were pretty good. And the West Coast Express was amazing. And we can get into Todd Bertuzzi and Moore and that incident. I remember waking up after that, the night after that happened, thinking, man, I was sure this was going to be Vancouver's year, and everything changed in a heartbeat. So, it's been a long time coming, and everybody keeps asking, is this the year?
Do you think it is? We got Winnipeg, we got Edmonton.
Well, again, I mean, nobody's got a harder path than Winnipeg, but the LA Kings went from 8 seed to a Stanley Cup, and they've got goaltending that can win a Stanley Cup for sure. I do like the Oilers, and great players. Most of the greatest players in NHL history have lifted that cup, and it could be time for Connor McDavid. The Leafs again have to go through a lot of ghosts and a couple of great teams. What a gauntlet to run through a team like Tampa Bay just to get to probably or possibly a team like Boston, and the Bruins found out the playoffs are different too, because Florida's going to give them a matchup in round one too.
I love watching Boston. How do you take your approach to following Boston?
Well, we did four games against the Bruins this year, and the Leafs beat them the first meeting 2-1 and tried to be the first team to beat them twice in regulation and couldn't do it. And what struck me about Boston, two great games down the stretch in Boston that the Bruins won by a goal. Boston does not beat itself, and it was uncanny. I haven't seen many teams like that just don't make any mistakes. And we talked about Samsonov, one playoff win. Linus Ullmark comes into the playoffs without a playoff win. So that was the only kind of question mark on my checklist for Boston was, well, there were two. two check marks. You wondered about goaltending experience, even though he had a tremendous year and he's going to win the Vezina. And number two, can a team that just has no adversity during the regular season kind of walk through a playoff round without any adversity? And how do you handle it when it finally confronts you? And I guess you can only confront it when it or handle it when it confronts you. And so far, Boston's not had to worry about it. And it's been a remarkable run so far.
Couple of broadcasting questions for you. Take people behind the scenes. Your favorite rink to call a game in?
Probably Montreal. It was the Montreal Forum. No place like the Montreal Forum. And I think the Bell Center did a pretty good job of replicating that. The broadcast booth is perfect. You always love the atmosphere at MSG. You love the atmosphere when it's going off in Chicago. Love the old rinks. Love Vegas. Love anywhere where, you know, the passion is and a playoff game in Edmonton in the last few years is even better than it was in the years at Northlands. It's just at a different level, not as in love with the broadcast position there. It's low, and I kind of like a middle position. Edmonton's low, and if you go upstairs, it's in another area code, which is awful. So actually we did the games in the bubble there and we were halfway, and that was an amazing location as well. But
were you in the stands?
Well, in an area that is kind of like an open bar, and that's why we can't use it during the during the regular stuff. But that location, I mean, that's quite a place to watch a game too. So that was an experience if you want to go inside. I mean, to do 45 games in, I think, 42 days was pretty special, even though you obviously miss not having fans. But to do game after game, to see all the teams in one venue, I think it was a scout's, dream if, and they weren't allowed in the building, but we were. I did two game sevens in the same day, Vegas and Vancouver, Dallas and Colorado. I mean, I'll never do that again. Two game seven playoff series back to back, which was pretty unique.
How do you memorize the lineups in a situation like that?
It's usually not the most difficult thing. I once I've seen a team once, I feel pretty comfortable with them, and I'll make mistakes the first time through. And hopefully after that, I find the comfort level, and that's why playoffs, once you get into it, are so much easier, because you're comfortable with the lines and the matchups, and you can anticipate. And even when you're blocked out for a brief second, you're pretty sure that guy on the far side is the right winger on that line, and that's probably Kucherov because Point and Stamkos are out there. And so, I memorizing the lines is not tough. I'm a guy that memorizes lines, so that's the way. It's funny, when I went to the Olympics and I thought, I'm not going to know the lines for Korea or for some of the teams that you're not familiar with Belarus or whatever. So a lot of broadcasters just list the players numerically. And so I thought, I'll try that. But my brain never worked from 1 to 98 or 99. It works in four lines and three defense pairings. So I remember after the first day at the 2018 Olympics, going back to the room and thinking, I got to redo everything. I got to get back to lines, even if there's going to be some mistakes. I just, that's the way my brain operates. So
I was going to ask you about numerically, because that was the way I was originally taught. But once I discovered lines, it's a life changer.
It's strange the way I think it seems to be split. I often, I'll ask or peek over and see a guy's game sheet. In fact, I had a great chat with Bob Wasician, who I think does a fantastic job with ESPN. And I saw he had the numerical list, and most of the guys are all computerized. I'm a hand-drawn old dinosaur, but he had this beautiful numerical typed out computerized thing. And but he also had the Bob Cole in pencil secondary sheet of lines, and that's all Bob would ever take into the booth. He'd almost have a napkin with the four lines and three defense pairs, and that's all he needed. But Bob's got both, which kind of covers both ends of the spectrum.
Were you ever around when a coach wouldn't give Bob the lines?
Peter Laviolette was
yes.
one.
Yes.
And we will not repeat what Bob said about Peter Laviolette. Sorry, Peter. But yeah. If you didn't give, and to the credit of most of the coaches, and I'm not slamming Peter because every coach has the right to how they want to handle this, but most 95% of coaches always said, that's Bob Cole. And whatever Bob Cole wants, I'll give him.
What's
but not Peter.
What's more challenging, football or hockey, as somebody that's flipped back and forth?
I don't find it. If you talk about memory work, there might be a little more memory work with football because in the case of the CFL anyway, there were, 43 or 44 guys on your depth chart. But again, if you organize the depth chart, you only have, again, Canadian football, you've got 12 offense, 12 defense. Once you're familiar with the CFL was easier too, because there were only 9 teams to learn. And, by week 3, we'd already done everybody more than once. So I never found that much of a challenge. I love both of them. I love calling. I found baseball, and I did very few baseball games, but I found baseball the most challenging to do because you've got all that time. It might be a little easier now with the pitch clock, but I don't know if the play-by-play guys are happier about that or not, but I found baseball the toughest.
Hey, what was your first job?
My first job, I had weekends at CKWS in Kingston. First time on the air, I tried to look into, we didn't have teleprompter. I looked into the camera and I thought I had to make more eye contact. And so I knew the Philadelphia Phillies had won a game on a big home run by their star third baseman. So I confidently looked into the camera and started to tell the story of Mike Schmidt's 3-run homer that decided the game. But I realized as I was into it that I wasn't sure where I was going next. So I hurried my story about Mike Schmidt and forgot to use the M in the name. And so, boom went the dynamite on opening day for me. So I was just grateful that I got a second chance. And my first full-time job, I got to say, was calling games in Yorkton, Saskatchewan for the Yorkton Terriers of the Saskatchewan Junior League. And on our first road trip, a 15-year-old defenseman came and sat beside me and told me he was going to play in the NHL. And his name was Ken Danico. And Ken was right. He not only played in the NHL, he lifted the cup a few times, and his name and numbers up in the rafters. So never forget where you start.
That's awesome. As somebody that worked at GX94 in Yorkton, you were a big person that we all followed, looked up to, and wanted to get there. So
great place to start. There's a few guys, Perry Salkowski,
yes.
I sent to Yorkton as well. So And Kurt Kielbach was the original. I got my first job in Montreal. I had not met Kurt, but Kurt had been the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, later with the Phoenix Coyotes. Kurt had been driving back through Yorkton and heard me, and it wasn't like it was a glowing report, but he had a friend in Montreal who was looking for a sportscaster. And Kurt said, well, there was a guy in Yorkton who was from down east, and I think he's gone back east, and I had gone to Kingston. And he said, maybe he'd be interested in going to Montreal. And strange the way connections are made. But I got a call, and the next thing you know, I'm walking into the 1981 Montreal Canadiens dressing room with Guy Lafleur and Bob Gainey and Larry Robinson. And that was a long way in a short time from the dressing room in Yorkton.
Wow. Did you go to Hollies in Yorkton? Was
Hollies,
that around then?
I don't know if Hollies okay. was around then. We did the coach's morning coffee show at the Flag Holiday Inn, which was not affiliated with the Holiday Inn, but Venice House, or the lasagna in the silver bowls at I think it was Venice House. Anyway, you couldn't touch the silver because they cooked it in the silver and they bring it out. And I'd always put my hand on the silver platter and you'd end up with a burnt hand, but the lasagna was good. So it was worth the pain.
Thanks for the trip down memory lane. Awesome stuff. And good luck with the travel. I know you get to be somewhat at home earlier here, but it's going to be a long run and a big fan, always have been. And this is a real privilege for us.
Awesome, Darren. No, my pleasure. And hope you have a great playoff run.
CC, love sharing those stories. The one about Mike Schmidt is awesome. Plus, I was a Mike Schmidt fan. Chris, he's not that older than me, but I came in just behind him in the business and always just wanted to be like Chris Cuthbert. That was one of our goals in life because he was at Hockey Night in Canada. He was at CBC. He was doing all these great things. So always cool to be able to track him down and chat with him. Plus, we know a lot of the same people, as you heard, so we can get into that kind of thing. Ray Ferraro, who Chris has worked with a lot, ESPN's lead analyst now, had a really interesting take last week on the Chirp podcast, and this is before anything happened in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He is an advocate for the higher seed to be able to choose whether they open a series at home or on the road, and the format would be, if you wanted to open on the road, you would go 2 away, 3 at home, and then 1-1. You'd still get game 7 at home, but you would be able to open on the road and just be able to grab a series. Imagine splitting on the road and then coming home for 3 games. It would really put the road team at a disadvantage and give, I think, the home team more of the edge, which you've earned through the course of the regular season. I love the idea. And then we go out and we watch the first 8 series open with the road teams winning 6 games and losing 2. So it adds a little bit of a credence and credibility to what Ray was saying, how teams at home just struggle early on in a series. So listen to last week's episode with Ray. It's an awesome take, and it really does reflect well on what's happened. Now, of the 6 clubs that did drop their opener of the series, let's walk through it and say, how bad is it really? I know the format change would be cool, but how much of a jam are these clubs really in? Dallas and Colorado, they deserve better in their openers. It's going to be just fine. Edmonton and Vegas, they're going to have to look inward. I think it was more on what they didn't do rather than the opposition, and I hate doing that, but that was the case. Edmonton was in full control in that game. Should have been better. And Vegas didn't create anything. 17 shots on goal in their game, 1 defeat against the Winnipeg Jets. So I think they look inward. They'll be able to solve those problems. Now, Toronto and New Jersey, very different, and they're dealing with opposite issues. Experience for Toronto, as in bad memories, the ghosts floating around. And I don't know why they can't get through this. I don't know why they have issues. But Toronto right now is 1 bad game from a goaltender to being a topic in Parliament. It's that bad. And part of it is fascinating to watch. A lot of it is painful and causes agony watching people go through that, especially the fan base. But if they can't get through it now, and I get Ray said it last week, Chris talked about it, like it's all right in front of them. It should be an ability to walk through this path, especially with the injuries that Tampa Bay is dealing with right now. Real concern there. I like Ryan O'Reilly. I like some of the experience that they brought in. Should add to it, but it's the goaltending that continues to get me bad. And Cuthbert likes what Ilya Samsonov did this year at home, so we'll watch that and the turnaround. And the New Jersey Devils, they don't have the experience that Toronto has, the bad memories that Toronto has. They don't have much experience at all. If they go out and play like they don't have experience and just roll with it, be young and have some fun, I think they'll be just fine. But not being able to lean on bad experience can sometimes, not being able to do that can sometimes be an advantage. Just go out there and play. I would love for them to be able to make that a series. But the goaltending in that series, again, is so heavily weighted towards the road team that I'm not sure that you can necessarily come through that. In the end, of the six teams that that did drop the opener of a series at home, I think four are going to end up winning the series. So that means the higher seed, in my estimation, the higher seed is going to go 6-2 in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll follow that up as we go along. Now, you watch the Joe Pavelski hit by Matt Dumba in game one of Minnesota and Dallas. The league really did get that right. They reviewed the 5-minute major, decided that it was a clean hit, and took away the penalty. That is really interesting because it could have changed that entire game, giving a 5-minute major. And we know how power plays are so influential in this Stanley Cup playoffs in particular. But it's fascinating to know that being able to review that play by the officials on Dumba on Pavelski is a direct result of what happened to Joe Pavelski back in 2019. He played for the San Jose Sharks. He was involved in a play off a faceoff with Cody Eakin of the Vegas Golden Knights. Pavelski went down. He was hurt. Eakin was assessed a 5-minute major, kicked out of the game. San Jose feasted on that power play and ended up winning Game 7. It turned around the entire series, and San Jose was able to advance in that set with Pavelski, and Pete DeBoer was the coach. Now, in the most recent example of this, Pete DeBoer, Joe Pavelski, were both involved in that game. It was reviewed. The penalty was taken away. Now, because the league watched the Eakin play from 2019 on Pavelski, decided that they got it wrong, they apologized, and they changed the rule. There was no review allowed back in 2019 on a 5-minute major. They can now. So same player, same coach, and same situation, but the league, that's progress right there. That's an amazing, and they deserve full credit to hockey operations with the National Hockey League for being able to get that right. Awesome stuff on that. Jonathan Toews played your last game of the Chicago Blackhawks. Please play another couple of years. And playoff beards, just want to give this some attention. The league doesn't like it because, well, I shouldn't say the league doesn't like it, but it's a bit of a thorn, all right, in the league, because the players' faces are covered up at the most important time of the year. By the time you get to the third round or the fourth round, the Stanley Cup final, the players' faces are covered up with all this fur, I like saying that, and they're unrecognizable to the 90% that we see them play during the regular season. So there's a push-pull in that, being recognizable and the all the eyes on a Stanley Cup final, but having all these full beards on them. But I thought it was really interesting that one of the playoff commercials that is on broadcast right now involves Joe Thornton, whose face is covered by this mammoth beard, and he's like totally recognizable. Everybody knows that's Joe Thornton. It's either him or Brent Burns. But there's no I in team, but there is an I in that commercial. And I love the paradox when it comes to playoff beards. And overtime in the Stanley Cup playoffs, thank you. You're like roller coasters. As I get older, I can't handle the roller coaster nearly as much, but I can't say no to it. Playoff overtime, I don't handle it nearly as much, even if I don't have a dog in the game. Dog in the fight. I'm so nervous in watching playoff overtime, but there's nothing like it. I love that it goes on forever. I love that it's 5-on-5. So thank you. I appreciate it. And on opening night, it was fascinating. I love the last couple as well. Thank you for being with us this week, Chris Cuthbert. Awesome job as you are always. That voice is just so etched in my brain as a Canadian, and fun to be a part of this ride and watching you go through the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Bob Bender, Fleetfoot Bob, attaboy. And we'll talk to you next week on The Chirp with Darren Millard.